So what if I told you that the most aggressively attended, like fiercely chronicled political speeches in modern history, the ones were universally taught, hypnotized an entire nation and birthed a totalitarian regime, what if they actually had essentially zero effect on the election result?
I mean, it's wild, right? It completely shatters that whole great man theory of history. Or, well, in this case, the terrible man theory.
Right, exactly.
Because we're so accustomed to believing that human behavior is driven by these charismatic narratives.
Yeah.
But when you apply modern computational social science to the actual data left behind, this much more, mechanical and often paradoxical reality emerges.
Yeah, which really brings us to the core mission of today's deep dive. We are speaking directly to you, the prospective master's student tuning in.
Yeah, you're the one mapping out your academic future right now.
Exactly. You're at the Erty School trying to decide whether to pursue your thesis in the MPA, MDS, MIA, or MPP programs. And specifically, you're trying to figure out if you want to join the lab of Simon Munsert, professor of data science and public policy.
Which is a huge decision.
It is. And we've got a really robust stack of his work in front of us today, covering published papers from, well, 2017, all the way up to a recent 2025 CHI paper on AI algorithms. Plus, we also have his actual master's thesis supervision plan for the upcoming 2026-2027 academic year.
And honestly, Munsert's academic profile is just a perfect case study for anyone entering this field, because he approaches public policy with the domain knowledge of a political scientist, but he, attacks the underlying assumptions with the ruthless toolkit of a data scientist.
Oh, totally. It's all about the digital footprint for him.
Right. He looks at the traces of human behavior, like where we click, what we edit, what we download, basically to bypass the narratives we tell about ourselves and just, well, find the empirical truth.
So let's unpack this by starting with that really jarring historical fact I mentioned at the top. Because Munsert doesn't just scrape modern web data, right? He applies these quantitative methods to reevaluate history itself.
Yeah, his 2018 paper.
Right. The 2018 paper investigating the campaign effects of Adolf Hitler's public speeches between 1927 and 1933. The historical consensus has always been that the sheer spectacle of these rallies, the airplane tours crisscrossing Germany, the massive crowds, that this was the primary engine driving the Nazi electoral surge.
Oh, absolutely. Historians constantly reference his, quote, unprecedented agitational potency.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Munsert and his co-author realized no one had actually, rigorously tested that claim against localized voter data.
Which is crazy to think about.
Right. So they mapped the exact locations, the dates, and the estimated attendance of these speeches and tracked them against the granular voting data of five national elections.
And the empirical reality is just striking.
It's negligible. The data shows his speeches had a negligible impact on the party's electoral fortunes, like almost zero localized effect.
Yeah, with the exception of a tiny, tiny positive bump during that highly compressed 1932 presidential runoff, but otherwise, flat.
I mean, it's like a modern pop star throwing a massive sold-out stadium tour that somehow results in like zero album sales.
That is a great way to put it.
But wait, how is that possible? I have to push back here. We always hear from historians about how hypnotic he was, how he swayed the masses. If the speeches didn't work, that completely undermines the idea of the charismatic leader brainwashing everyone.
What's fascinating here is the methodology they use to prove this. Because, proving a negative in data science is really hard.
Because politicians obviously campaign in areas where they already have momentum, right?
Exactly. That's strategic targeting. If you just look at a town where Hitler spoke and the vote share went up, a lazy analysis would just say, oh, the speech caused the bump.
Right, but that's just correlation.
Yes, mistaking correlation for causation. And that is exactly why they use this really rigorous, semi-parametric difference in differences approach.
Okay, difference in differences. Break that down for us.
So it doesn't just look at before and after vote shares in a vacuum.
Yeah.
It relies on finding a parallel universe, basically. Statistically speaking, of course.
A parallel universe. I like that.
Yeah. They took a municipality where his speech occurred and matched it with statistically identical municipality where a speech does not occur.
Oh, wow. So like a perfect control group.
Exactly. So if the town that got the speech saw a 5% increase in votes, but the control town that didn't get the speech saw a 5% increase, maybe due to broader national trends or economic factors, then the net effect of the speech itself is zero.
So they basically isolated the speech from all the surrounding noise.
Right. By stripping away the national momentum, the economic devastation of the era, the strategic targeting, They found the speeches themselves were mathematically hollow.
That is incredible. And it implies that before the regime seized monopoly control over the state media in 1933, they were just like another voice in a crowded room.
Yeah, and it's a massive validation of the minimal effects paradigm in political communication.
Which is the idea that propaganda struggles to manipulate voters directly.
Exactly. In a competitive information environment, even extreme propaganda struggles to change a mind directly. People's underlying economic and social conditions dictate their voting behavior way more than a single campaign event.
No matter how theatrical it is.
Right. Until a regime actually takes control of the mass media apparatus, individual speeches just don't have that mind control effect we imagine.
Which reveals this really fascinating through line in political behavior. Because if physical propaganda rallies struggle to sway the masses, how do politicians try to manipulate their image today?
They turn to the digital town square.
Exactly. The subtle, supposedly neutral digital town square, Wikipedia.
Oh, this paper is brilliant.
Let's talk about the 2017 study on German members of parliament MPs editing their own Wikipedia biographies.
It's just a masterclass in utilizing digital trace data. Because, you know, Wikipedia is perceived as this neutral information source.
Right. Voters don't go to a politician's personal website expecting truth, but they trust Wikipedia.
And that trust makes it incredibly powerful, low-cost political advertising.
So Munsert tracked 108,775 edits across 1,100 MPs, and he used IP addresses traced directly back to the Bundestag IT network.
Which is just wild.
Over 50% of MPs had their pages edited from within parliament.
Talk about a digital footprint.
And I just want to look at the actual edits impartially here, because we have examples from across the whole political spectrum. Like, you have a CSU chairperson who added all these relatable details about growing up on a farm with a butchery.
Really leaning into that rural, relatable vibe.
Yeah. And then on the other side, you have an SPD chairman having his membership in a leftist youth group completely deleted while he kept his moderate ties visible.
It's totally algorithmic curation of an optimal identity.
But okay, let's unpack this for a second. Couldn't these just be innocent staffers fixing typos or like updating campaign links? Why assume it's strategic manipulation?
Well, the researchers actually tested that by looking at the specific electoral incentives.
Yeah.
Germany uses a mixed electoral system, right? So you have district MPs who rely on local personal votes and list MPs who rely on party votes.
Okay.
If it was just innocent housekeeping, both types of MPs would edit their pages at roughly the same rate.
But they didn't, did they?
Nope. The data shows that district MPs were far more likely to edit their pages than list MPs. Because they actually need that flawless personal narrative to win their specific geographic seat.
Oh, wow. So the variation in the data proves the strategic intent.
Exactly. It shows how people manipulate these supposedly neutral digital tools for their own image.
Right. Which smoothly transitions us to our next topic. Because we see individuals manipulating digital tools for their own image, but what happens when governments try to use digital tools to manage a global crisis?
Oh, the psychology completely flips.
Yeah, let's look at the 2021 study on Germany's official Corona Warn app.
This is such a fascinating look at the friction between public policy and actual human behavior.
Because during COVID, digital contact tracing was seen as this silver bullet, right?
Yeah. But the whole model relies on widespread adoption.
And people lie on surveys.
They absolutely do.
So Munsert's team had to combine survey data with actual mobile tracking software. They bypassed the fact that people say they downloaded it when they really didn't.
Overcoming that self-reporting bias is the only way to get a clean data set.
And the data revealed this crazy paradox. People with a high risk of severe illness actually downloaded the app. But those with a high risk of exposure and transmission, they had lower uptake rates.
Which structurally breaks the whole utility of the app.
Right. So they ran an experiment to test solutions. They showed people 2-minute explainer videos. One appealed to their pro-social responsibility, like protect the vulnerable, and the other appealed to their self-interest.
And did it work?
It completely failed. Neither video increased app downloads at all.
Wow. Not at all.
Nothing. But then they offered them a tiny amount of cash. Just like 1 euro or 5, 1 euro.
And that worked.
It resulted in a massive boost in uptake. It's like trying to guilt trip your roommate into doing the dishes versus just buying them a coffee to do it.
That's a perfect analogy.
Sometimes lofty moral messaging just loses to a few bucks.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, public policy often operates on the assumption of an information deficit.
Meaning they think people just need more facts.
Exactly. Policymakers assume that if people just understood the moral stakes, they'd rationally choose to do the right thing.
But it's not about facts. It's about behavioral friction.
Right. Munzert's data proves that small monetary incentives overcome that friction much more effectively than educational videos.
It's just human nature. We're lazy.
We really are. But, you know, while we rely on apps to protect our physical health, we increasingly rely on automated algorithms to protect our digital health.
Yes, which leads us to the flaws in the machine.
Exactly. Because who is auditing the algorithms?
Let's dive into the highly recent 2025 CHI paper. This is an audit of commercial content moderation APIs, tools from Google, Amazon, Microsoft, OpenAI, Perspective.
This is such crucial work right now.
They ran a 5 million query audit. 5 million. And the results are just...
Well, they show that these algorithms rely heavily on basic group identity terms.
Like what?
Words like black, gay, Muslim, Jew. And because of this crude keyword matching, the APIs end up over-moderating marginalized groups.
Oh, so they flag, reclaim slurs and legitimate counter speech.
Exactly. Yeah. But conversely, they under-moderate implicit hate speech. So codified indirect attacks, especially against the LGBTQIA plus community that don't use obvious slurs, they just slip right through.
It's just a structural blindness to nuance.
But I have to ask, these are billion-dollar tech giants. Why are their state-of-the-art tools failing at the basic linguistic context?
Well, it comes down to the danger of black box systems.
Black box meaning we don't know what's inside, right? These companies don't provide transparency on their training data or their thresholds, so deployers of these APIs are basically flying blind.
They plug it in thinking it's a sophisticated tool, but it's fundamentally misinterpreting context.
Exactly, which is why Munzert's paper is a massive call for independent audits. He highlights that we need better guidance from API providers to prevent the silencing of legitimate speech.
We really do. So we've seen how Munzert applies data science to history, to public health, to AI ethics. But let's turn directly to you, the listener, for a second. What does it actually look like to step into his lab in the 2026-2027 academic year?
Yeah, let's look at his current supervision plan for the MPA, MDS, MIA, and MPP students.
His supervision style is intense, but in a great way. He wants strictly quantitative, data-driven research.
Absolutely.
You can pitch your own topic or grab one of his ready-to-go data sets, but the ultimate goal isn't just a passing grade, right? He expects a rigorously designed, publishable research paper.
Yeah, he treats his master's students like serious scientific tiers. And the way he enforces that standard is through structured milestones.
Like the pre-analysis plan.
Exactly, the PPP. By demanding a summary, a literature review, and a methodology outline up front, before you even touch the data, it prevents bad science.
So what does this all mean?
It means working with him is less like taking a class and much more like a rigorous apprenticeship in modern computational social science.
It really is. Well, we've covered incredible ground today, from busting myths about 1930s propaganda to uncovering Wikipedia manipulation, boosting COVID app uptake, and holding AI moderation accountable.
It's been a journey.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over.
Let's hear it.
So Munzert's work relies on analyzing the digital traces left behind by human behavior, right? Our edits, our app downloads, our survey responses.
Right.
But as we move further into the late 2020s, AI agents are beginning to autonomously browse the web. They're writing articles, moderating each other.
Oh.
Yeah. So how will computational social scientists separate the human digital footprint from the synthetic one? What happens to data science when the data is no longer strictly human?
That is a wild methodological challenge when the footprints in the digital snow aren't even human anymore.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining this deep dive. As you map out your academic future, consider whether you're ready to bring your own research questions to Munzert's lab. See you next time.